It is a pleasure and a blessing to be here. You have a very good energy here, and I appreciate that. And I have really enjoyed seeing the children that you have here, and I want great continued blessings for you in that. And the lesson this morning is going to be directed to the young people. And that's a wide array of young people. Now, if you're not young, like I'm not, there's going to be scriptures and principles in here that are still very beneficial, and so I hope you'll listen too. But really who this lesson is directed for is if you're, say, in your 20s or early 30s, I want you to pay particular attention, particularly if you haven't married yet. We'll be talking about marriage in the adult class and those things, but especially we're going to be talking about some choosing spouses. If you are in your late teens, if you're college age, if you're in high school, I would like you to pay particular attention. If you are in middle school, I would like you to pay particular attention. And if you're one of the little guys or girls that I've seen in here this morning, and you're about this tall or so, I would like you to pay attention this morning, because there's some things in here I really want you to think about. We're going to read a few scriptures, and we're going to tell a few stories, some stories from the Bible, some stories from modern life, to help illustrate these principles. We're going to begin in Ecclesiastes 12 and then go to Proverbs. In Ecclesiastes 12, we have this verse in verse 1. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth. The age groups I described a few minutes ago, from small children up to teenagers and early 20s and such, there are so many blessings in being that age. One of which is that when you get injured, you heal quick. But that's not the ones that I want to be focusing on. Some of the great blessings are that you get to make good choices right now that will affect your entire life and the lives of other people. Now, you can, in your old age, choose to come to the Lord. I've seen people do that, and it is a beautiful thing. But sometimes when we come to the Lord and make good decisions later in our life, we are limited in some of the things that we can do because of choices that we have made in the past. And right now, if you're in those age groups, you're getting to prepare yourself to make really good, powerful choices. And if you choose wisely, you will have a better life. You will be able to be a servant of God that will affect other people greatly and be a blessing to them and to your children, if you marry, et cetera, and your spouse, and just people way out there. So, let's turn back now to Proverbs, and I want to look at a couple of texts here. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8 says this, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction, forsake not your mother's teaching." This is especially for those of you who are still at home. In the New Testament, Paul gives this instruction in Ephesians 6 to children. He's talked about different relationships, and then when he gets to children, it's honor your father and mother and obey your father and mother. Those are not exactly the same thing, by the way. You can obey without honoring. You know, if mom or dad tells you to take out the trash and you go, "Oh, why do I always have to do this?" And you do it, you might have obeyed getting the trash outside, but you didn't honor. The Bible says, honor your father and mother and obey your honor and your father and mother. And there's some very good reasons for that. If you're 10 years old, I imagine we've got somebody in here that's 10. There's a lot of things that you know. You know a whole lot more now than you knew at 5, right? I want to ask you a question. When you're 15, are you going to know more or less? you're going to know more. When you're 18, are you going to know more or less than 15? Wow, you're going to know even more. You're going to know how to drive. You're going to know lots more things. When you're 22, you're going to know even more than that. When you're in your 30s or 40s, you're going to know so much more. Guess where your parents already are? They don't know everything, but your parents know a lot. And God gave them to you so that you can learn from them. I was talking one time, there was a mom and her daughter. The daughter was 13, and they were having a lot of trouble. And they asked me to come over and talk. And so I'm sitting there, and there's the mom, and here's the rather disgruntled teenager. And she's got her issues, and she's not respecting her mom a whole lot. And so I asked the 13-year-old, I said, do you think your mom knows what it's like to be a 13-year-old girl? And she goes, no. And then I pointed out, yes, she does. Because she was, I think, in her 30s. You can't get to your 30s without going through 13. It's not like those elevators, you know, that skip the 13th floor. She'd been 13 before. She did that for a whole year. I said, she knows what it's like to be a 13-year-old girl, but you don't yet know what it's like to be an adult mother in charge of a 13-year-old girl. So God gives us parents for a reason. Listen to this from the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 1. Hear, O sons, a father's instruction. Be attentive that you may gain insight. For I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. This is a generational thing. See, your parents used to be little, and they had parents. They had parents. He says, when I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom, get insight. Do not forget and do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Wisdom is what's going to help you make good decisions. Where there's people trying to get you to go to a party and get involved in drinking and drugs and promiscuous behavior with the opposite sex and different things, you're going to need wisdom. Because let me tell you something. The devil's ways offer you something up front and then a lot of pain coming down the road. It's kind of like when you're fishing. If you go out fishing and you want to catch that fish, you've got a hook, right? Do you just throw that hook out there and say, look at this sharp hook? No, you put something on the hook, don't you? You put that nice, big, juicy worm on there. You don't pick up that dried up worm from the bottom of the boat from last week. That's not attractive. You put that nice, juicy worm on there. And what are you hoping that fish will notice? Do you want him to look at the hook? You want them to focus on that worm that he can get right now. And here it comes. And then what happens? There's the hook. And then he ends up in the frying pan. And then he ends up bones in the garbage. The devil, stop and think about it. Let's take something like drug use, alcohol use, illicit sexual relationships and stuff. They'll bring a certain amount of pleasure up front. And then how do people feel the next morning? And after a lifetime of that, where does that take them? Whereas God's ways are different. God wants us to aim high and look long term. And God will give us good things that then get better. God gave the old covenant, which was good, but Hebrews, what's the word in Hebrews about the new covenant? Better. There's this body that is fearfully and wonderfully made, as the psalmist says. But what body were we promised in the resurrection? One that's better. A baby starts off, and new Christians start off on the milk, but then we advance to the meat. But you got to have some patience to hold on and wait for the things that are better instead of taking the trash that's on the hook that's going to destroy you. So wisdom, you need to get wisdom. Get wisdom, get insight. Do not forget, I'm in Proverbs 4, verse 5. Do not turn away from the words of her mouth. Do not forsake her. She will keep you. Love her and she will guard you. This is what wisdom will do for you. The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom. Whatever you get insight. And then it says down here in verse 14, do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of the evil. Avoid it. Do not go on it. Turn from it and pass on. And then at the end of the chapter, it says, let your eyes look directly forward and your gaze be straight before you. Ponder the path of your feet. Then all your ways will be sure. Don't swerve to the right or to the left, nor turn your foot away from evil. Some years ago, I was talking to a young man. He was 15 at the time. And he was getting himself into trouble. And I went in to talk to him. I said, where do you want to be at 25? That's 10 years from now. Where do you want to be? I said, where would you like to live? And he said, I'd like a big house out in the country. Well, that's cool. I said, what do you want to be? What do you want a job? He said, I want to be a scientist that studies bugs. I wouldn't have picked bugs, but still, that's great. Okay, that's wonderful. And he wanted to have dogs and some guns. And I said, do you want to be married? He said, yeah. I said, what kind of wife do you want to have? I want her to be true and honest and beautiful. Okay. What kind of kids do you want to have? I don't want them to be respectful and obedient. I said, okay. I said, that'd be wonderful if you get all those things. You know, I'd like you to have those things. Here's the problem. The road you're on doesn't go there. The road you're on goes somewhere else. And you can't get to where you want to be then if you're doing what you're doing now. That road doesn't go that way. And he'd started getting in trouble with the law. And I told him, I said, here's the thing. If you don't get control of yourself, society is going to take control of you, and you're going to spend a lot of your life in prison. And he said, that's what everybody tells me. Did he listen to wisdom? No, he didn't. He didn't listen. And within a few months, he was in prison, and then he was sent off to the state prison, and he spent about 10 years in prison. And then he finally got out, and then he married somebody that wanted a good choice, and in a very short time ended up divorced. And he's got a messed up life. And it could have been different if he had listened to wisdom, if he'd chosen right paths, but he didn't. Part of choosing those right paths has to do with looking beyond what you want to do right now. I'll tell you what got him put in prison. He wanted some money. So he went over to the store about two blocks from his house with a BB gun. And he thought, I'll go in there and scare him and, you know, get some money. So he went and he scared the guy, all right, and the guy had a heart attack. And he got caught and he sent away from prison. So he spent all that time in prison for this stupid decision made because he wanted to get some money that day. There's a test that I think they did at one of the universities up in New England years ago. It's been repeated a number of times. If you go online, you can watch and see it. Show of hands if you'd like to indicate how many of you are familiar with the marshmallow test. All right, there's a few people, there we go, several people up here. So the marshmallow test is a test, and first time I read about it in an article that said that your emotional quotient, which is indicated by this marshmallow test, is a better indication of how you're going to do in life than your intelligence quotient. In other words, there are some really smart people that can do well on a test that don't do well in life because they don't have mature emotions. And it said if you have the mature emotions, you will do much better in life than the person who's just got a high IQ. And the way they measure it is this. They'll take, say, like five-year-olds, and maybe some younger, some older, depending on who's doing the test, and you put them in a room and you got a camera. And the researcher comes in and they put a marshmallow on the plate. And they tell the five-year-old, I'm gonna leave. If you want to, you can eat that marshmallow. You can eat it right now, you know, as soon as I walk out the door, you can have that marshmallow. But if you don't eat it, I'm gonna come back in just a few minutes, and if that marshmallow is still there, I'm gonna give you another marshmallow. And you can pull up the videos and watch the kids, and it's amazing what they do. And some of them are just really patient. They sit there and they know, if I wait, I get two marshmallows. And they might look at it, sometimes have to distract themselves and look away. And eventually, a couple minutes later, the researcher comes back in, they get two marshmallows. Then you have some of them, and as soon as they go out the door, you know what, they're not getting two marshmallows. They're nearsighted, they're short-sighted, they're only looking at what's right here. Now that study has been criticized in the last few years because they've said some children, if children are from an environment, say they've been through a lot of foster homes and different things, and they were in an environment where you didn't know if you were going to get food or not, that a child in that situation, food on the plate beats the promise that there might be food later. So that could be a variation in those type of situations. But for most children in this country, you can understand the idea. One now or two in a couple of minutes. That test is an important indicator. Stop and think about it for a minute. That if I'm that kid that goes, why didn't you wait? I wanted it now. What's going to happen when I get my first credit card? Because you know what that credit card can do? I can get that now. I can get that now. I can get that now. And pretty soon you've got a ton of debt with a ton of interest, and you've just caught off being able to get a lot of things later. What's going to happen when that child grows up and is offered a promiscuous relationship or some substances to abuse and something that causes some immediate benefit? So don't go that way. There's a group of people in the Bible that were like that. Do you remember the Israelites coming out of Egypt? So let's remind ourselves of that story. You're in Egypt, you're a slave. You're a slave, your spouse is a slave, your kid's a slave, your parents are a slave, you have a baby, and oh, what's he gonna be when he grows up? A slave. And they cry out to God, and God hears them, and God sends Moses. But when Moses comes, at first it starts making things a little harder on the Israelites. Have you ever heard the expression, sometimes it has to get worse before it gets better? If you get a splinter, you ever get a splinter? And it really hurts, and it hurts. And you go to mom, oh, I want it out. And she goes, okay, let me get it out. Her getting it out hurts, doesn't it, sometimes? If it's stuck in there good. Oh, it hurts. Well, but we need to get it out. Because if we leave it in there, it's going to get worse. And so for a few seconds, you bear the pain. Ah! And she got it out. Sometimes it's got a little better, worse before it gets better. But then they start complaining. Moses, you're just making it worse on us. But then they get to go. And they get to the edge of the sea. And wow, God has delivered us. And then they hear, here come the Egyptians. And then they start complaining. Why'd you bring us out here? You know, we asked for deliverance. You're giving them deliverance. And now they're complaining about, why'd you bring us out here to die? It would have been better to die back there. He says, watch. And he parts the sea. Sea opens up. They go across the sea. The Egyptians, really bad military maneuver here, decide to proceed following. Sea closes upon them, and they're on the other side. In Exodus 15, what are they doing? They are singing a song of praise. They are excited, and they are praising God that delivered me and destroyed the Egyptians, and they're thrilled. 3 days later, they're complaining. Well, they need some water. There's a difference between a request and a complaint. Does Philippians 4 tell us to take our requests before God? Yes, with thanksgiving. Nothing wrong with asking for water, but it might have been better if they'd said, Lord, thank you for delivering us from Egypt. Thank you for, you know, taking away our enemies. Could we please have some water? But they begin to murmur. They're given water. Then they start murmuring about food. And then eventually they're murmuring about the way the food tastes. All we have is this manna. And then they keep saying, you know, we're going to die out here in the wilderness. Oh, and now they start remembering Egypt like it was some great place. You know, oh, we ate the food for free. Yeah, so did the mules and the horses. You know, they weren't being paid either. But you've got this just short-sighted, all they're looking here, and what do they end up missing? That generation doesn't make it to the promised land. They kept looking backwards, and at their immediate problem now, and they don't get to go to the promised land. When we only focus on what's right in front of us now, I want this now, or I don't want to do that now, we're not going to serve God with that attitude. And we're not going to be much use to other people. And we're going to be destructive to ourselves. For all the complaining that the Israelites did over and over, saying, you know, we're going to die out here in this wilderness, we're going to die out here in this wilderness, God finally had enough. And he said, you're not going into the promised land. So you know what happened instead? They died out there in that wilderness. Be careful what you ask for. Here's another story I want to share with you. Turn to Luke chapter 15. This is the story of the lost son. And particularly those of you around 10, 11, 12, 13, and older, I want you to think about this here as well. How many of you guys have ever said this to your parents or thought about saying this to your parents? I'm 12 years old. I ought to be able to fill in the blank. Or I'm 10. I ought to be able to fill in the blank. Or I'm 16. I ought to be able to fill in the blank. What are you usually filling the blank in with? A responsibility or a privilege? Usually when a young person says that, they're filling it in with a responsibility. A privilege. I ought to be able to stay out as late as I want. I ought to be able to have my own car. I ought to be able to, you know, have my own phone. I ought to be able to do this. I ought to be able to go to that because I'm this many years old. One of the problems with that is viewing adulthood as I get to do whatever I want to do. When you become an adult, you find out adulthood is not about I get to do whatever I want to do. Adults have responsibilities. Now, when you fulfill those responsibilities, you then do get to choose things that you want to do. But responsibilities need to be fulfilled first. So let's look at this story and see how this is illustrated. I'm not going to take time here to talk about the spiritual point of how this represents our lost state before God and coming back. I just want to focus on this part. Verse 11, there was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the property that's coming to me. And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country, and there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. And he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country who sent him into the fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. When he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread? but I perish here with hunger. I will rise and go to my father. I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And that's good. Now, as you know, the story goes on. The father is going to give him much more than that, but it's because it illustrates God's mercy to we who have taken God's blessings, wasted them, and sinned against him, and then come back and need his grace. And he lets us be sons and daughters. And then there's a point to be made about the older brother who has the attitude of the Pharisees from verse 1. But what I want to focus here is, what was his attitude? That inheritance money. Who had produced that? This selfish boy? He wanted privilege. He felt entitled to privilege. Usually, by the way, when do you get the inheritance? When your father dies. In this case, the boy wants it sooner, and his father hasn't had the decency to die yet, and so he just wants, give it to me early. He's totally entitled. I want, me, give it to me. And he lets him have it. And then he goes and wastes it. Now, a while back, I heard of a young man inherited like $30,000, young guy, and within a few months, it was gone. Drugs and foolish living, and he accidentally killed somebody, and just, it was gone. You can go through a lot of money really quick when you're being foolish. And there are a bunch of people who will surround you and help you spend and waste and snort and shoot up and whatever that money really quickly. But where do they go once the money's gone? I remember one young man I used to work with, and after he ended up in prison, you know, I went to see him. He said, my drug friends didn't come to see me, you know, but here you are. He ends up alone, and now he's feeding pigs, wishing he could eat their food, and which is ironic. We pointed this out yesterday. This would be a Jewish boy wishing he had it as good as a pig. That's kind of the picture that Jesus ends up painting here. He's wishing he could have what pigs had. But his attitude changed. When he went away, why do you suppose he went to a far country? In the parenting class, we had mentioned this as well. He's trying to get away from his father. He doesn't want any rules. He doesn't want any responsibility. He doesn't want any accountability. He just wants privilege. And if you get privilege without any sense of accountability and responsibility, what's going to happen with that? You're going to waste it. Now he's come to his senses. And when he goes back, what does he want? Is he asking for more privilege? Now what's he asking for? Give me some responsibility. Let me be a servant. Give me some work to do. I don't deserve to be your son. Just let me do some work. This boy is matured. And the father is so happy for that and doesn't just say, that's right, you don't deserve to be my son. He doesn't, but he makes him his son anyway. Puts a ring on his finger and is glad to have him back. So next time you start thinking, I'm 13, I ought to be able to, I'm 16, I ought to be able to take the car whenever I want. How about, I'm 16, I ought to be able to maybe do the oil change. Oh, there's a thought. You know, I'm X number years old, I ought to be able to take care of my own laundry or whatever. I'm X number years old, maybe you're a little bit older but still at home, I ought to be able to pitch in on the electric bill or the property tax or something. You see, that's a different way of looking at things, isn't it? If you go through life thinking life is all about me, and getting what I want, you can become really selfish. I want to talk now in the last few minutes about marriage and marriage choices. And I'm going to give you two stories as we close here about marriage choices. And you're going to see some wisdom in one and some foolishness in the other. I'm going to give the foolish one first. So, several years ago, a young Christian girl who, she wasn't married yet, but several of her friends were. And they'd all married boys from church. And she said, not a single one of my friends, girls, that have gotten married are happy. Not a one. Now, in some cases, those marriages got better later, but at that time, none of them were happy. And there's probably more than one reason, but some of the reasons were, too often today, listen to me on this, a girl gets proposed to by a young man that she thinks is going to be a man, and then she marries him and finds out he is a boy and has no interest in being a man, and finds out not only that he is a boy, but he is a bad boy and an undisciplined boy. Too often, they find out that he is addicted to pornography. And he thought, because it's like the marshmallow thing, I can have this now, I can have this now. And he thought, well, when I get married, then I'll stop. And then he doesn't. And it causes a tremendous amount of pain. That's one thing. But another thing is when, I'll give you this story. Young man, young lady got married. He has a job. It's not a very good job. He doesn't apply himself at it. He's not going to make much money at it. He can't support his family with it. He just, you know, he'll go to work, but he doesn't try, and he gets paid a little bit of money. He comes home, and he doesn't have a home to come to because he's not trying hard to do anything, and so he's living in his mom's basement. And so his bride is living with him also in mom's basement. And then he comes home and he sits down and he starts playing his video game. And he will play his video game until 3 a.m. was his habit. And he ignores his wife, and I don't remember if they had any kids or not. They may have had a small child or two that he also would have ignored. 3 a.m, he's finally exhausted from playing his video game, and we go to bed and we get up the next morning and go to his job that he wasn't trying to do well at and hadn't really prepared for or anything. And then he would come home and he would sit down at his video game again. And he'd play it until 3 a.m. and just ignore his wife and any children that were there, if there were. And she left him. Now, she didn't have a right to leave him, but can everybody here understand why she wanted to leave him? You want to guess what kind of video game it was? It was one of those military, you know, first-person shooter games. And he would play that for hours and hours and hours and hours. Why do you suppose he liked that game? I think it made him feel like a man. So he would sit down in this little virtual world in his mom's basement, ignoring his wife, and playing a game where he felt, I'm a man, I'm a man. That's not a man. Guys, be a man. Be a man worthy of a woman. Be a man for your children. Be a man for your wife. Take care of them. Provide for them. You know, you look back at the curses in the Garden of Eden, and there's overlapping of relationships and stuff and duties. But in the original curses, the primary curses on Eve relate to her domestic relations, to her husband and children. The primary domestic curses on Adam, along with death, relate to his being a provider and that type of thing. Be a man. The last story I want to tell you is this one. And this is a better story, so it's a nicer one to end on. This was, I didn't know this person, but I heard about it on the radio from Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Some of y'all might remember when she was on the radio. And she got a letter one day that she read on air and shared this story. And this was about a young woman up in the Northwest, I think it was Washington or Oregon. And she married a little bit late. She was a little older when she got married, but she didn't go to the bars, she didn't go just, she had an idea of what kind of man she was looking for. And she'd made a list of qualities, character qualities that she was looking for. And her friends thought she was foolish. And I thought, that's not romantic. You know, just kind of love at first sight. Just, you know, if he looks good, you know, he's got a cool car or whatever, maybe. No, she's going to wait. She's going to find a man that has quality. And then one day she met a fella, and he had good character, and he had qualities. And he also had a list, because he was looking for a woman that had qualities. And she had qualities. And they got married. And then something terrible happened. She got struck with a really horrible disease where she became incapacitated. She could not function. She couldn't move her body and hardly. And she put out a tremendous amount of weight. And of course would have looked very different than she did before. And you know, in the marriage vows, what do we say in the marriage vows? In sickness and in health, for better or for worse. And he stuck with her, and he took care of her. And she was writing to Dr. Schlesinger saying, you know, because she couldn't even bathe herself anymore. And he said he would help get me into the shower, and he'd have a stool in there and put me on it. And I couldn't take care of myself, and he would bathe me. And she said, he never complained. And he still complimented her and told her he loved her. That was a really nice ending to the story. She was able to get free from that disease and she got her health back. But she found out something fabulous about the man that she chose, didn't she? He loved her. Sometimes when a young man is going to get married, he'll say, oh, I'm in love. You really love her? Oh, yeah, I love her. You know marriage is for life. Oh, yeah, well, I'm in love. Tell me about how you love her. Well, I love the way she talks. I love the way she walks. I love the way she looks. I love her smile. I love her hair. I love you know, the way she touches my arm and laughs at my joke. I just love her. Everything that's fine to love those things. But all of that is what you get. What if a month before the wedding, she's in a terrible accident and her hair is burned off and that beautiful complexion is burnt and she's crippled and she can't walk anymore and she can't use that right arm anymore to hold your hand? Do you still love her? He goes, now, if that were to happen, I think it'd be a good thing to put the wedding on hold and let people decide what they're going to do, because it's only fair to stop and think about what you want to do. But if it's after the wedding, it's after the wedding, and the vow's been made. But the thing is, you got to stop and think there about how selfish your love is. Because, you know, everything that he was saying, I love, I love, I love, I love, I love, it's really, I get, I get, I get, I get, I get. And real love involves giving. John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave. Think deeply about life. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Choose wisely. And thank you for your attention. Let's sing the song. God.